south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, you think if you lived in a gated, guarded community, there just wouldn't be random people walking the neighborhood, knocking on your door and bothering you. And that's basically true, because to get into a gated, guarded community, you got to go through the guard gate. You've got to have a reason to be there, a reason to get in. Like, for example, if you're an electrician or a roofer or a maid or a gardener. The fact is, if you live in a gated, guarded community, for the most part, they are very quiet. You don't see people you don't know walking by. And if someone comes up to the guard gate looking for you, the guard calls your house and asks you if it's okay to let the guy in. That's one of the reasons you live in a gated, guarded community, for privacy and security. Now, of course, when you first move into a gated, guarded community, people will knock at your door. People you don't know, because you're new there too. Mostly people looking for a maid or a gardener job. Because, you see, if you do live in a gated, guarded community, nearly everyone in your neighborhood is going to have a maid or a gardener, or both. Or even a nanny, a live-in babysitter called a niñera. Anyway, as soon as you move in, the local cleaning ladies will stop over asking if you need help, because they'll have a sister, a daughter, a cousin, whatever, looking for that kind of job. That's one of the big differences between living in a gated, guarded community here in Latin America and one in the States. How many homeowners do you know in your neighborhood have a live-in maid or a maid and or gardener that comes in daily? Years ago, when I was living back in the States, I didn't know anyone that could afford that kind of luxury. And the ones that could, or almost could, never had a live-in maid, just one that came in a couple of days a week. So anyway, if you're living in a gated, guarded community here in Latin America, people will not knock on your door and bother you. No one's going to make the rounds in your neighborhood trying to sell you something. Which is why it always blows my mind every so often you do get a knock on the door from a Jehovah's Witness. Somehow they seem to get past security. How does that happen? Well, I'm thinking, since they're on some kind of mission handing out pamphlets and stuff, the guy at the guard shack just throws in the towel and lets them in. So, depending on where you live, they'll show up every 6 months or so. And if you're lucky, once a year. Well, as luck would have it, just this week they came back again. And here I thought they'd never bother me again, based on what happened last time they came. A couple of years back now. That time I got a knock on my door. There were two middle-aged ladies with a stack of pamphlets. They kind of caught me off guard, because previously, when they'd come around, I'd always get rid of them by saying, "No hablo español." That would always stop them dead in their tracks. You say that, you've made it perfectly clear there'd be a huge communication breakdown, and that would be the end of that. Well, this time, being they caught me off guard, I greeted them in Spanish. And of course, the next few words out of their mouths was something on the order of, "Brother, have you heard the word?" In Spanish, of course. That's when your eyes roll and you're thinking, how am I going to get out of this? Then, without fail, they say something like, "Can we have a moment of your time?" And that's when I said, "Sure, if you give me a minute of yours." I said, "I'll tell you what, I'm cleaning up around the house right now, so I'm kind of busy." Remember, this is going down in Spanish now. I said, "I'll give you a bucket, some Windex, and a rag. You start cleaning those windows over there, and while you're cleaning, start talking and I'll be listening." Well, you should have seen the look on their faces. They didn't want to have anything to do with actually helping me clean around the house while they gave me their spiel, and I knew they wouldn't. They looked at each other, there was a pregnant pause for a moment, and one of them said, "Sir, senor, just take one of these pamphlets and we'll be on our way." It was all quite painless. I didn't have to laugh at them, mock them, or give them any kind of weird looks. They decided in something like 10 seconds to leave of their own volition. I smiled and patted myself on the back, thinking they'll never be back. But I was wrong. Just the other day, it happened again. This time, more than 2 years after the previous encounter. It was two ladies again, two different middle-aged ladies. Must be a thing with sending middle-aged ladies around. So, anyway, right after one of them said, "Brother, have you heard the word?" In Spanish, of course. I said, "Just a minute. Be right back." Well, I popped off into the guest bathroom and took the toilet scrub brush. You know, those things that sit in their own little container on the floor. I came back to the front door and I said, "Here, take this." And I held it out, and one of the ladies looked at me funny, but she took it. I said, here's the deal. I'm cleaning up around the house right now, and I'll listen to anything you have to say while you're helping me clean up so you can get started on the toilet in el baño de visitas, the guest bathroom. Well, you should have seen the look on their faces. The dumpy one standing there with the toilet brush in her hand. There was another pregnant pause as she looked at her partner. She slowly lowered the toilet brush, put it on the floor quite gently. She said, please, just take a pamphlet. We can see you're busy. We'll come back another time. But I bet they won't. Not those two, anyway. Someone might come back in the future, but it won't be those two. I can guarantee that. So then, how do you handle a Jehovah's Witness encounter? Are you short? Are you snippy? Or do you play nice? Roll your eyes and hear them out. Come to think of it, now, there's a good use for ChatGPT. Have you tried that yet, ChatGPT? Maybe next time I'm in there. Yeah, I've used ChatGPT a few times. How about you? I'll pose the question. I'll ask it, give me a couple of suggestions how to get rid of a Jehovah Witness in an amusing kind of way. I mean, look, you want to get rid of them, but you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, right? But man, I'll tell you, talk about being thick-skinned. I bet Jehovah's Witnesses take a rejection training course. Their skin's got to be as thick as an elephant. Imagine a customer relations call center staffed with Jehovah Witnesses. By the way, my brother in Chicago once asked a Jehovah Witness at his door if she'd ever witnessed Jehovah personally, you know, physically, not in a dream or some kind of fantasy. Then he said you'd increase your marketing tenfold if you'd send around a bunch of young, beautiful JHs door to door. And man, that middle-aged lady skedaddled in a hurry, he said. Well, that's my other brother for you. I ought to tell some of his stories sometimes. Now, here's an interesting email. Johnny, can you get Girl Scout cookies in Latin America? He says, Johnny, I'm addicted to those peanut butter ones. I'll order 10 boxes. They last about a day and a half. Signed, Stan, expat wannabe from Minneapolis. Well, Stan, the good news is they have Girl Scouts here in Latin America. At least I've heard they have them. I've asked around, and some of the ladies tell me they do exist. In fact, I was watching an Easter procession some years back, and there was a troop of Girl Scouts on a float. Plus, you might remember me mentioning in the Dominican Republic in Santo Domingo, they've got a road called Girl Scout Calle, which is Girl Scout Road. So, if they're going to name a road after the Girl Scouts, they got to have an organization, right? However, when I've asked certain ladies here in Latin America about the Girl Scout cookies, most of them acknowledge the existence of Girl Scouts, but they're confused about the cookies. They don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But Stash, the good news is if you move down to Latin America, you can order all the Girl Scout cookies you want through Amazon. Who'd have thunk, huh? By the way, you can understand why Girl Scouts wouldn't go door to door here in Latin America selling Girl Scout cookies. I doubt parents in the States with Girl Scouts at home let their kids go door to door. But way back when I was a kid, my sisters were Girl Scouts. They sold lots of cookies door to door. Was a completely different world back then. I'm sad for its demise, too. In fact, I remember back then, kids would come to the door selling you all kinds of crap, mostly to support school functions, chocolate bars, even Christmas cards. I was a Catholic school kid, and we got roped into selling Christmas cards door to door. Imagine that. And those cards weren't even funny. They were so serious. Man, I just hated knocking on doors trying to sell stuff for Jesus, especially when you realize the pastor is driving a much better car than your dad or any of the cars of your friend's dads. There's something wrong with that picture. I'll tell you, the moment does come when you realize you're not collecting money for Jesus anymore. You're collecting it for the bureaucracy. But I digress, man. Did I digress? Speaking of ChatGPT, have you tried it yet? It's really amazing and scary, too. You can use the free version. It's ChatGPT 3.5. You just download it at openai.com. But here's what I found out. You can't download it if you're living in Latin America. As you try to start it up, it detects your IP address and won't let you do it. So you need a VPN. Just plug in any US server in your VPN and it'll download fine. Then, of course, it's going to do what so many other programs do. It's going to ask you for an email and then it'll send a link and you'll have to click that. So it's continuously collecting data on you, too. And that's really why OpenAI is giving you ChatGPT for free, or at least you think it's free. What they're really doing is collecting data and all the inquiries from people using it. By the way, there's a paid version of ChatGPT. It's ChatGPT 4.0. It's said that it's 10 times smarter than the one you use for free. I understand there's a ChatGPT 5.0 as well, and none of us has access to that. Of course, guys like Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and bastard Billy Gates, the Chinese, the Russians, North Koreans, and Jeff Bezos have access to it, and their businesses are using it, as well as all the U.S. alphabet agencies, too. But you knew that already. It's scary stuff, all right. We'll see how it plays out. Sort of think it won't end well. By the way, there's an inquiry from emailer Chris. He asks, if you're using ChatGPT, do you have to worry about what kind of searches you do? Are they collecting info? Of course, Chris, they're collecting info. That's the purpose of giving you free ChatGPT 3.5. But if you sign up for it anonymously using a VPN and a disposable email address, or an email address that's used specifically just for that, like, for example, a StartMail alias address, sure, they'll still collect data and all your inquiries. But as long as you don't let on who you are exactly, it won't matter. Unless you're asking about things that are blatantly illegal, like how to build bombs or blow up bridges or poison food and the water supply. Wait a minute. I take that back. Monsanto is already doing that. And nothing ever happens to them. Too big to jail, right? Speaking of food and water contamination, did you see that article that came out yesterday? They're reporting that almost half of the tap water in the U.S. is contaminated with forever chemicals. That's according to the U.S. Geological Survey. It also says the number of people who are drinking contaminated water in the States is higher than what the study found for sure, because the researchers were not able to test for all the hundreds of substances that are considered dangerous to human health. They were only able to test about 35. Yet you still get people, Americans, usually older Americans, who say, the tap water is fine. I drink it all the time. We've always been able to drink tap water in the good old U.S. of A. That's what sets our country apart from the other shithole countries. Yeah, right. But here's the thing. At least in those shithole countries, they tell you right out, as soon as you land there, don't drink the water from the tap. Whereas in the States, there's this naive belief that the water supply has been purified somehow. That's what most people believe who trust their government. Now, a lot of people who aren't in the know, will tell you that those tiny little trace impurities in water won't do you any harm. They're at levels too small to matter. However, in June 2022, based on EPA studies, health advisories were issued saying that the chemicals, those forever chemicals, are much more hazardous to human health than scientists originally thought, and are more dangerous even at levels thousands of times lower than previously believed. And that's coming from the EPA, who are known to be in the pockets of big industry, those major polluters like 3M, Monsanto, and DuPont. And for them to come out and say that is pretty harsh. Now, according to the National Institute of Health, the NIH, another completely captured organization, they've issued warnings too. Imagine that. They say there are more than 12,000 types of forever chemicals, PFASs they're called. But back to this recent study, which included both private wells and public water sources. Turns out the scientists collected water samples directly from taps at 716 locations in the U.S., 269 locations of private wells, and 447 from public utilities. Based on their finding, they said those forever chemicals are detected in 45% of U.S. drinking water supplies, including well water, with the highest concentrations of the PFAS forever chemicals in drinking water found in the Great Plains, Great Lakes, Eastern Seaboard, and Central and Southern California, with concentrations of the chemicals similar between private wells and public supplies. Worse yet, there's a quote here from Dr. Jamie D. Witt, a professor of pharmacology and toxicology at Eastern Carolina University. He says, quote, there's been almost no place scientists have looked where they have not found forever chemicals. So then where do these forever chemicals come from? They're used to make carpets and clothes stain resistant. They come from laminated and pressed board furniture, Teflon stick pans, and food packaging material. They're used in mobile phones, commercial airplanes, and low-emission vehicles. They're in the residues of all the food we eat, says DeWitt, including what you buy at the farmer's market and in grocery stores and in rainwater and even in waxed, not unwaxed, dental floss. And according to a very large 2019 study in the U.S., those forever chemicals could be found in 98% of the human population. By the way, Dr. DeWitt says, for one, homeowners could have filters in their water systems that could easily remove those forever chemicals. or at least lowering their levels to such a degree they are virtually undetectable. Placing a carbon filter in your water line will help a great deal, but it has to be changed regularly. Then the article goes on by saying, we've got a lot of work to do, says Dr. Graham Peacely, professor of chemistry and biochemistry at Notre Dame, who says, this might be the most expensive problem we've ever had to face. It's going to be really expensive to clean it up. He says there are no permanent solutions to fix this for any particular utility system. It looks like a frightening problem, he says, that each household must address itself. But, he says, the cleanup will have to be done because these chemicals carry real devastating health consequences. These are really insidious poisons, he says. And don't fool yourself, they're in our bottled water, too. All right, me, Johnny here. Question is, how many of you guys up in the States, Canada, Europe, whatever, how many of you have a purification system under your counter, in the kitchen, at home? I bet only about 20 or 30% of you. The rest are drinking bottled water, and that's no good. Though, for sure, you're much more attuned to this than the average public. I know you guys and gals listening to this are much smarter than the average slug. Speaking of things that pollute that almost no one ever talks about, I know in a previous show I mentioned this once. I got a couple emails in response to it, too. I asked the question, when you replace the tires on your car, or the brake pads for that matter, where do you think the old ones went? Well, in the case of the brake pads, they got ground down to a fine dust, got kicked back into the air and landed somewhere, mixed in with the soil, the water, same thing with your tires. More synthetic petroleum products going into your air, water, food, etc. I don't even want to tell you how many billions, with a B, of tons of that stuff have just vaporized off your brake pads and your tires since those things came into general use over 100 years ago. Have you ever heard anyone talk about that kind of pollution, except on this show? Why not? We've all got tire and brake dust in our lungs and in our bodies. Of course, things are a little bit better now in regards to brake pads. They used to be made out of asbestos. So now they're not good, but they're not quite so bad as before. The fact is, I'm almost sure the industry will change over to magnetic brakes like they use in some electric cars and high-speed trains. There will be a switchover, slowly but surely, just like when we went from leaded to unleaded gas. By the way, there's proof that during the leaded gas days, the average IQs of kids growing up back then were permanently lowered by 3 to 5 IQ points. It happened to me. I'm just a little more dense than I should have been. Oh well, at least I've got a really good water purifier, huh? Better late than never. If you want to know what I use and want to build one yourself for under $100, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. By the way, if you are living in Guatemala or anywhere in Central America, in lieu of the system I use, that 3-canister under-counter system, you'd be just as well off getting one of those echo filters that we mention sometimes on this show. I make no money from this. I just mention them once in a while because they're simple and they work very well. No plumbing required and under $100, in fact, way under $100 if you get the cheapy one, which has all the same internal components, but it's not glazed ceramic work of art that sits on your kitchen counter. If you want a real nice looking one, I mean the outer portion of it, you will pay around $100 or so. You could get the basic cheapie, I think it's around $40. You see them in the back rooms and kitchens of restaurants and coffee shops everywhere throughout Latin America. That's a very good sign. Just like my undercounter system, the Echo filter has 3 stages, a ceramic filter, carbon filter, and it's perfused with colloidal silver, which is antibacterial. So then I've been asked many times, what's the difference between my undercounter 3-canister system and the Echo filter system, which goes on top of your counter? Well, you see, the Echo filter system's a gravity feed, so it works without any water pressure at all. That means you could take out a cup of water here or a gallon of water there, but it doesn't have continuous, solid, high-pressure flow like my system. So, for example, if you wanted to fill up a 5-gallon jug full of pure water, with my system, you could do that in about 5 minutes. With the Echo filter system, it could take a couple hours, because my system's working with the house water pressure and Echo filter by gravity feed alone. But really, not a problem. With that Echo filter, you might only run out of water if you're having a party. The other thing is, the Echo filter is portable. You could pick it up and move it to another room, outside, or to a neighbor's house. Though if you smack it too hard, or you try to ship it on an airplane, whatever, you could break it. Don't try to ship it. You risk damaging it. In fact, I remember once I was flying from Guatemala to Mexico, and on the plane, sitting about 3 seats away from me, was a guy with a big box on his lap. It was an Echo filter. He was taking it to Mexico and didn't want to stow it because he said that he was advised by the airline. They weren't responsible if there was damage to the thing. So he got it on through to Mexico, all right, but, well, you get the point. All right, how about this email from Mr. JC? He says, Johnny, you might be interested in knowing the current price per square foot to build a house in Guatemala. Well, he says, me and the wife are doing just that. We are working with an honest and very smart builder. All the first world bells and whistles, too, like 4-inch pipes where needed, correct vapor barriers, the highest grade cement blocks, etc., etc. His quoted price, $44 a square foot, including all doors and windows, ceramic tile throughout, all bathroom sinks, bathroom showers, etc., toilets, weather stripping, the works. He says, I'm trying to save money on the garage by using columns and a metal roof and covering with tile to hide the tin. Some roof tile is required by our neighborhood code, though all paint color is determined by the homeowner. Though I'm not sure my garage design will be approved by the housing committee or not. All right, me Johnny here. He says $44 a square foot. I just looked it up. In the States, the average cost is $100 to $150 a square foot. Wow, what a savings. Then JC says, of course, I checked out the builder. Last week, we stayed at one of the houses he built in Puerto San Jose. Very well constructed and designed, with air conditioning in every bedroom and screens on all the windows, and with lots of mosquitoes at no extra cost. Why people want to live on the beach is beyond me. Anyway, cheers, Johnny. Signed, JC. All right, thanks for that, JC. Great info. Now, JC's building his house in the Guatemalan Altiplano. Therefore, no AC required. Now, the Guatemalan Altiplano runs right through the center of the country, from top to bottom, Mexico to El Salvador. And JC says he visited a house that was built by the builder he's using. That house is on the coast by the beach. That's why he's talking about AC in every room and all those mosquito freeloaders. By the way, in Guatemala, lots and lots of wealthy people have two houses, sometimes three. One house in the Altiplano, generally near or close to work, and a beach house, which could be 1 to 4 hours away from the main house in the Altiplano. By the way, I'm right there with JC. I'd never want to have a beach house in Latin America. I say that now because I've had two of those in my life, and believe me, I'd never do it again. As for me, 1 or 2 weeks at the beach every couple months, preferably at an all-inclusive big resort, is just fine with me. To me, having your own house at the beach is like having a boat. The day you buy it is the best and the worst day of your life. By the way, since we're on the subject, I would say, without a doubt, the worst real estate investment of all is a timeshare. Man, you can't believe how many stories I've heard from gringos and expats saying they bought a timeshare and after a short time lived to regret it. Now, of course, you longtime listeners have heard me talk about this before. Turns out my own mother, who's very book smart, narrowly missed getting sucked in with a timeshare scam. Took me a lot to tuck her out of it. And now, believe it or not, because of the lag time thing, it's all the rage down here in Latin America. Latin Americans with some kind of credit rating, decent credit rating that is, are getting bombarded with timeshare info and getting sucked into weekend timeshare seminars. You know the drill, where they give you a free weekend and a brand new timeshare? That's the easiest way to set the hook in an unsophisticated investor. And who are they preying on? The unsuspecting up-and-coming middle classes who can't afford to get a mortgage on a second home, a beach house, but can qualify for a 20 or 25 grand timeshare on a payment plan they'll be totally sick of in a couple of years. Speaking of bad real estate investments, do you realize that the bottom has fallen out of the Airbnb market? Have you been watching the news? It seemed like a never-ending growth industry, Airbnbs, right? In fact, I get emails from expat gonna-bes and wannabes all the time thinking they're going to come down to Latin America, buy up some real estate, a couple of units in a residential tower, whatever, and rent them out as Airbnbs and live happily ever after. Well, guess what? Seems like worldwide the bloom is off that rose. So many people have gotten into the act, there's a huge oversupply. Yet real estate developers down here are still pushing that idea to gringos and expats like it's a solid gold evergreen idea. Like everything else, the blowout in Airbnb started in the USA first. Don't believe it? Well, listen to this headline from Nick Girelli from ReAdventure Consulting. He says, many Airbnb owners will soon be forced to sell their properties, resulting in a housing bust that could be on par with the 2008 subprime crisis. The article says Airbnb owners are getting ready to sell because of the huge downturn in the short-term rental market that started in the second half of 2022, with many Airbnb operators in the States facing 50% decline in revenues. Reflecting the huge decline in revenues resulting from the slowdown in post-pandemic travel demand, along with a massive increase in Airbnb supplies, causing a large percentage of Airbnb owners to lose money on their rentals. It says, if you're a home buyer or real estate investor, it's important to understand the exposure of your city and neighborhood to this Airbnb crash. The biggest culprit, it says, is that the number of Airbnb rentals in America has skyrocketed from less than 200,000 7 years ago to a million in 2023, a 500% increase. Get this, it says of the 182 counties in the United States with the most short-term rental listings, revenues were down in 179 counties. In other words, 98% of the Airbnb rentals in all the counties in America were down. It says the upcoming Airbnb bust in America will be primarily felt in two types of locations: dense urban areas that have the most Airbnb inventory in big cities, and vacation destinations. Did you hear that? Vacation destinations. Meanwhile, more and more Airbnbs on a daily basis are popping up in Latin America. I hear gringos and expats talking about it all the time. I'm going to put my house up, but it's an Airbnb. I'm going to build onto it. I'm going to expand, build a cottage, rent it out as an Airbnb. Well, just remember, everything that happens up in the first world comes down here eventually through lag time. So be careful. You don't want to get in on the tail end of that market or any market. Of course, Airbnb owners that run into financial distress don't have to sell. Instead, they could rent out the property long-term, but most landlords I talk to would much rather rent out their places than Airbnb because they make three or even four times as much money. I mean, look, you could rent out your place for $1,000 a month or as an Airbnb for $100 a day. Do the numbers. That's $1,000 a month versus $3,000 a month. Oh, and here's another thing I've noticed in big cities here in Latin America where they've got a lot of residential towers and nice neighborhoods. I've visited friends and gringos and expats in a number of these residential towers, and I've been noticing signs when you walk in stating specifically no Airbnbs allowed in this tower at all. In other words, the Junta Directiva, that'd be the housing board for the towers, decided no one can rent their place out as an Airbnb because there are too many people coming and going. Too many young college kids on vacation partying at all hours, music blasting, which can be a real irritant and security problem for the permanent residents of the building. So you might buy a unit in a residential tower and your best laid plans are foiled when your housing committee votes to disallow Airbnbs.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.